I'm Alan Jolliffe. I'm previous curator of the Botanic Gardens in the 1970s and 80s. We're standing at the main entrance of the Botanic Gardens, right beside the Canterbury Museum. So we're going to walk right down beside the museum here and towards those big pine trees in the background, which is the Pine Mound. This lawn has been called the Armstrong Lawn for many years, but previous to that was the Front Lawn. Armstrong came to New Zealand and after two or three years here was appointed a government gardener in charge of the domain. A really interesting character. He was here in 1866 for 22 years and for the last 16 years he was joined by his son Joseph, and together they did a lot of botanical work, a lot of importing of trees, propagation of trees and distribution of those trees all around Canterbury. And it wasn't until after Armstrong probably died before it was actually renamed, in honour of the fact that he did spend 22 years of his life helping establish the Botanic Gardens, not just the Armstrong, but the whole of the Botanic Gardens, including most of the walkways through the Botanic Gardens, the ones that he laid out as part of his planning. So, you know, really did a lot of extra work right through the Botanic Gardens in those days, and probably with very little labour and very little money, but a lot of enthusiasm and dedication to the job. There's a diagonal walk off to the left and we'll walk back up towards the Peacock Fountain. And as we walk through, on our left is a particularly good specimen of a cutleaf beech tree from England. It's actually grafted. You can tell by looking at the bottom of it where it's actually been grafted on. So that would have been one that Joseph Armstrong bought out from England, possibly bought it as a bit of budwood in winter time on a ship and then grafted it here in New Zealand. We'll just keep walking along the pathway here and we'll turn left and go down to the Peacock Fountain. The Peacock Fountain was bought by the Christchurch Beautifying Society from a donation by Mr. Peacock, who was a provincial councillor and I think he was an MP as well. He was also a very wealthy businessman and merchant in Christchurch. And when he died, he left some money in his will to further the public enjoyment of the Botanic Gardens. And the Beautifying Society decided that the best thing they could do was actually build a fountain in his honour and call it the Peacock Fountain. And as we get to the Peacock Fountain, on the left-hand side is a lovely ginkgo tree. We're in April and it's just starting to turn that buttery golden yellow. This tree here is quite big for what it is, a living fossil really, because it was only discovered in the middle of China quite recently, and that's probably in the last 150 years, it was thought to be extinct. So we just come to the Peacock Fountain. As you can see, it's a really interesting fountain. When it was first installed back up on the archery lawn, the art world, or some of the critics of the art world, didn't like it. And the head of the Canterbury College of Arts, Robert Smith, stated in a letter to the press in 1911, "It exhibited no more taste than a gaudy decoration used by travelling showmen to embellish their merry-go-rounds." End of quote. So he obviously didn't like it. People have different views. Some artists might have different views, and general public will have other views. And that's fine. I think people should make up their own mind about the fountain. We'll go round to the left here, past the little pump station, and walk down towards the curator's house. So coming to the far side of the fountain, we look south towards the curator's house. Now, that house is at least the second house that's been there. Certainly, the early photographs show a small cottage, really, a single-storey cottage with a gable roof and a veranda out to the left-hand side. And that would have been where Armstrong lived. This current house was built in 1920, was used as a curator's house right through to about 1982, and I was fortunate to be the last curator to actually live in that house. And we could tell you some stories about how people used to come and look through the windows to see what it was like on the inside, by stepping over the fence or through the gate, and being woken up every morning by the caretaker who opened the main gates to the Botanic Garden, so it didn't need an alarm clock. As we about halfway down, we see the statue here of William Sefton Moorhouse. Now, he was the second superintendent of Christchurch. His claim to fame as stated on the base of the statue, is that he fought politically for the tunnel between Lyttelton and Christchurch, or between the port and the plains. So we're walking down towards the house, and probably worth stopping and looking at the bedding plant displays as they line this this walkway through here. This is almost the reason that Armstrong left his job after 22 years. Armstrong was a plant collector and believed in the power of plants. He imported about 4,000 different species into New Zealand from Europe and other places. Many of those were of economic importance, so forestry-type trees, agricultural trees, trees and plants that provide food, medicines, all of those things. Because that was also Joseph Banks's view about botanic gardens as well, was can we find plants in this world that are of economic benefit to us as food, medicine, construction, whatever. So Armstrong and his son spent a long time looking at plants. But towards the end of his tenure, the board decided that they needed more colour and plants through here. So Armstrong did actually lay out a bedding scheme and beds through here, but it wasn't his thing. And he and his son both resigned together and left the botanic gardens simply because they didn't want to spend all their time doing bedding plants. There are other, what they've described as important things that needed to be done botanically. And he lived in Christchurch after that, and he died about 1902. And his son Joseph, not quite sure where he went to work after this. Joseph was a really keen plantsman that went up into the mountains and right around Canterbury and other parts of New Zealand collecting New Zealand native plants. And between them, they established a big native plant collection here, which was recognised as the best in New Zealand. We'll move up to the curator's house here and have a quick look. From 1982, for about 20 years, it was a private residence that was rented out. And then after that was put up for lease, and the company that still runs it today actually won the rights to have a restaurant in there. So a Spanish-themed restaurant. Was a little bit cold to live in, and around the back of the house, they've developed a an edible garden, basically, and some of the produce from that garden is also used in the restaurant as well. You can walk down the side of the house, and we'll go down and have a quick look there, and have a look at the edible plants there. Everything that you'd find in your home garden, plus a lot of extras that you won't find in your home gardens. Number of different herbs. There's parsley and there's beans and there's cabbages and apples and grapes. There's a beehive here as well. So something for the kids. You spend a few minutes in here and walking around, there's little bits of microclimate being developed with protected cropping here. And we're just walking under the arch of pear trees at the moment. And we'll work out through this archway. With hops, we turn left at this point. So we're walking now right beside the river. It's the Christchurch Hospital across there, and at the weekends you'll see people rowing their boats up and down the Avon. We might just cut through here beside this big oak tree onto the lawn and have a look at some of the trees. Just on our right, just before we go through, there's quite a good magnolia collection in here. Things change over time, and this lawn under Armstrong had quite big beds of flax and cabbage trees, because being English, they didn't see those sorts of things, and they were quite intrigued with the growth and the shapes that New Zealand plants could actually provide. So we'll go to this tree here, which is surrounded by a little chain link fence. It says it was planted by the Duke of Edinburgh. Now, it's interesting. It looks a wee bit bedraggled, because when he was here, he said, and no one is allowed to touch this tree with a saw or a knife or anything. But it has been touched, as you can see. But generally, it's been left alone to do its own thing. 1869. So not long after Armstrong started work here, really. Yeah, it's 140, 150 years old. And, I mean, a 200-year life is probably pretty good in New Zealand for an oak tree. Our climate's different to England. And in England, you know, that could be a 400-year-old oak tree starting to decline. But New Zealand's climate's different. It's less harsh, so therefore it's a softer tree and possibly could deteriorate a little bit quicker. And just to the right, the big, tall sequoia we saw before was also planted by him as well. And you just see the buttress and the base of that, how big that is, and you get an idea how long it's been here. And just back behind us is a rimu tree, New Zealand native, and that was planted by more loved Governor-General Sir Bernard Ferguson, and he planted that in 1964. And it's actually quite interesting to see that we actually used a native tree in 1964 as a commemorative tree rather than a European or an imported tree from somewhere else. So from here, just make your way and have another walk around the lawn, go to the front gate or turn left and go into the Botanic Gardens and have a look at the rest of it.